Madam President, I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the Sergeant of Arms will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Eileen Blanche from International House of Prayer, Rochester, Minnesota. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Heavenly Father, we just thank you for the opportunity to invite you into all that we're doing. I ask, God, that you would look at us with a lot of grace and favor today as we cry out to you on behalf of the state of Minnesota and all the beautiful people, Lord, that live here. Lord, I thank you for our senators. I thank you, God, that they're handpicked by you, that they've been called to represent the people of this state. I ask, Lord, that you would fill this house with your presence and that they would know that you are here. Father, we're just little people, and we desperately need you. So I ask that you bring harmony among us, that you would help us to listen to each other. Father, I pray for our senators and for all the staff here, that you would touch them personally, but also their families, that you would protect them, God, and keep them safe as they go about the business of governing this state. So, Lord, we thank you for this incredibly beautiful day and that you're here now, God, to bring divine order. In your precious name we pray. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Buck, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. Third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments a concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 888, a bill for an act relating to the operation of state government, appropriating money for the legislature, governor's office, state auditor, attorney general, secretary of state, certain agencies, etc. Senate file number 888 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file number 888 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with the like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 846, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
First reading of House bills. The bill printed on the agenda will be given its first reading and referred as indicated. Eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills printed on the agenda on today's calendar are given their first reading and referred as indicated. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. These are authors' motions to be adopted as one motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate Resolution Number 142 and 143 will be referred to the Committee on Rules. Are there any announcements? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, today is Three Rivers Park District Day at the Capitol. I'd like to invite everyone to stop by the Upper Mall and visit their displays. You can sample maple syrup right in the parks and meet baby lambs and chicks from Gale Woods Farm. The event runs from 12:30 to 3:30 this afternoon, so be sure to stop by when you have a chance.
Are there any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, the majority will caucus in room 112 immediately upon recess. Like to be back on the floor by 1:30, if that's okay, Senator Hahn.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Baca, noise in the chamber wasn't quite sure. Did you say be back by 1:30?
Senator Bach.
If that works, Senator Hahn, if you think you need a little more time, we can certainly do that.
Senator Hahn.
Madam President, Senator Bach, I think we'd like to have maybe a half hour longer if that's possible.
Senator Hahn, 2 o'clock is fine if that works better.
Madam President.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you. And if so we'd be back at about 2, and our caucus would meet in room 112.
Senator Bach.
And Madam President, the majority caucus will meet in room 107. Madam President, I move a recess of the Senate.
On the motion to recess, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.
Madam President, I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, the list is on your desk.
First bill on special orders is number 158 on general orders, House File 4, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Madam President and members, this is the Transportation Finance Bill, House File 4. And I just wanted to talk for just a few minutes about why we do transportation as an essential public service, as one of the core responsibilities of government. We all know that the business of Minnesota is business. The best social program in the world is, of course, a job. It's not hard to see when one looks around the country in our world which economies do the best for creating and sharing prosperity and which don't. Those that do invest in key public services, education, health, safe communities, an even playing field, a clean environment, civic expression and participation, quality of life amenities, communications, energy, and ease of movement, transportation infrastructure. Minnesota has been grappling with the lack of necessary investment in our infrastructure for almost 30 years now. We did make a significant but small step in 2008. At that time, we already had a very good handle on the need that had gone lacking for 20 years. And at the end, when we passed the bill, we said, given how small this step was, we'll need to return to this conversation sooner than 20 years. So here we are in 2015. Consider for just a moment that more than half of Minnesota's roads are more than 50 years old. 40% of the state bridges are more than 40 years old. And in just the next 3 years alone, 1 in 5 Minnesota roads will pass their useful life. In the next 10 years, nearly 40% of our roads will be past their useful life. Poor roads cost Minnesota motorists $1.2 billion every year. In extra vehicle repairs, Minnesota businesses spend an extra $250 million each year on additional freight transportation costs caused by congestion. The average Minnesota commuter wastes 34 hours stuck in traffic every year. By 2025, if we don't address this, the Minnesota commuter will waste an estimated 45 hours stuck in traffic. Just to keep up with the minimal repair needs that we have to maintain our existing infrastructure, we fall short $250 million per year. If we're going to compete with emerging economies, our economic development competitors, our growing population, Just for our state highway transportation needs, we have a $6 billion deficit over the next 10 years. That's just for the state highways. It doesn't count our towns, our counties, and our cities. With almost 1 million people expected in the region in the next 15 or so years, we'll need more transit options to meet the demands of the millennials and our aging population. There's no way we'll be able to build enough roads for the mobility needs, particularly in this metropolitan area. We'll also need transit service for folks in our communities all across the state, particularly those who want to stay in their homes and continue to be a part of our vital communities. We know that the workhorse of our road financing system, the gas tax, has declined in its buying power over the decades. It loses ground to inflation, exacerbated by a faster rate of inflation in the transportation sector for those commodities that we use to build roads and bridges and transit systems, to greater fuel efficiency, a good thing, but it has a paradoxical effect of diminishing the buying power of the gas tax because cars are using less gas, and to the fact that across all demographic groups, people are driving less for a whole variety of reasons, and that's not expected to rebound anytime soon. In fact, if the gas tax had been allowed to keep pace with inflation over these past 30 or so years, especially transportation inflation, it would be, just for the state's portion, well over 50 cents, 55 cents per gallon. So members, I'll speak to what this bill aspires to accomplish. I'll speak to some of the particulars of the bill itself. We need to raise money for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, the workhorse of our transportation system, in which we place three constitutionally dedicated sources of revenue. We look to the gas tax. We raise that on a per-price basis at the wholesale level of 6.5%. And despite some confusion or some disinformation, this operates in all respects as our current gas tax does. There is no difference other than how the price is computed, collected at the same time, in the same place, in the same manner, and in fact is converted to be a gas tax per gallon equivalency. It's calculated one time per year, averaging the cost of the previous year in August, and then goes into effect in October. It's pegged at a floor of $2.50. And then the license tab fee, which we haven't raised in some time, goes from 1.25% of automobile value to 1.5%. The depreciation schedule, as cars decrease in value over time, remains the same at 10 years. The minimum that has been raised in over 30 or maybe even 40 years of $10 is raised to $20. From this fund, we're able to support state highways, county highways through the county state aid highway assistance we give to locals, municipal arterials through the municipal state aid funds that we provide to cities that are population 5,000 and above. Through the 5% set-aside, we get significant additional dollars to town roads and town bridges, and also through that particular 5% set-aside, we do a little bit of changing so that we're able to get some dollars to small cities below $5,000 that don't qualify for municipal state aid, as well as some dollars to the municipal state aid. We provide for dollars, secure dollars, appropriated on an annual basis for county and municipal turnbacks, those elements of the state highway system that no longer function as state resources, as state facilities, and we turn those back to the locals. But before we do that, of course, we fix those up and put them in good shape before we turn them back to local authority and local ownership. In the metropolitan area, to support both the regular route bus service and transitway improvements, we go to a full cent sales tax from the current quarter cent that's raised in the 5-county metro area. The existing quarter cent that's raised in the 5-county metro and is administered by the county's Transit Improvement Board stays in place and functions largely in the same way. And then the 3/4 is available to all 7 counties. We provide a mechanism for counties to opt out if they're able to pull together with 4 other counties and opt out of that. It still would be a state tax, but counties could come together and say they don't want that particular tax to be collected in their county. And if 4 counties get together, they can agree to have that happen. This would be used mainly for the bus system, bus operations, to support our regular route bus service, as well as the operating needs of new transitways. The county's Transit Improvement Board, as I said before, would operate largely in the same way to pay for some of the transitway operating, but also would go towards securing the major capital effort that we need to undertake. The benefit, members, is that what we do now through the general fund to support transit operations through the general obligation bonding bill, the capital investments bill, would no longer be required. And in fact, the metropolitan area, for the most part, would be entirely self-supporting in terms of transit needs. And that annual appropriation from the general fund, as well as effort through for capital needs through the bonding bill for the 10% state share, would be the responsibility of the metropolitan area. General fund would still need to flow to the Metropolitan Council to support metro mobility, our seniors and disability services that will continue to grow over the coming years because, of course, we're all getting older. We would require the Metropolitan Council to deliver and grow our basic bus service, support the basic operations of buses and transit, like I said before. Some of those dollars would be used to build bicycle and pedestrian facilities, support research at the Center for Transportation Study, fund our transit management organizations, and provide a grant for the opt-out, the replacement bus services, the suburban bus services, to provide a demonstration project to connect suburbs to suburbs. An eighth of a cent would be flexed and would be allowed to be retained within counties that generate that eighth of a cent for the purpose of transportation. Hennepin County, that would be devoted solely to transit purposes, but other counties could use it for roadway or other transit or transit-related types of facilities development. Folks may know that the county state aid highway system in the metropolitan area has gone lacking for many, many years. That's partly due to the formula that we use to distribute county state aid highway dollars across the state. The needs go unmet for our county, our major county highways in the metropolitan area. To remedy that problem, a few years ago, we allowed five of the seven counties in the metro to divvy up a portion of the motor vehicle lease tax. Part of that goes to Greater Minnesota Transit. Part of that goes to the five counties for their CASA. I'll get to Greater Minnesota Transit in just a second, but the what we do for the metropolitan area CASA to bolster their needs, to address their needs, is we take an additional $10 million in that pool. Currently, $32 million goes into the general fund. We only send $22 million over the general fund. What remains, we retain and we divvy up among seven counties now, and we apportion that on a population basis. Hennepin County, we only count a quarter, 25% of its population. Ramsey County, we only count 50% of its population. The other five counties count the full complement of their population, and we divide those dollars up in that fashion. For Greater Minnesota Transit, like I said, they'll no longer be participating in the motor vehicle lease tax, but we increase their share of the motor vehicle sales tax, which, as we know, is constitutionally dedicated, no less than 40% for transit, no more than 60% for roads. We allow them to take an additional 4% of the motor vehicle sales tax, sharing from those 2% of that goes currently into the highway user tax distribution fund, and 2% that presently goes to Metropolitan Transit. So they get a full 8% that more than makes them whole for their current base level appropriations that they need. And additionally, we provide $6 million or $12 million of the biennium for their growth needs in Greater Minnesota. Supporting both small and large cities, we raise two separate fees on two different vehicle transactions, vehicle transfers and vehicle filing fees, and we split those dollars. It comes to about $60 million for the biennium for the purpose of supporting small cities and large cities, small cities below 5,000 who don't qualify for municipal state aid, as well as large cities above that amount. Madam Chair and members, the reason we do that is because even the formula dollars that flow to cities, either through the municipal state aid account or through the small cities that we create through the 5% set aside, just isn't sufficient to address the need for cities, the pressure that they experience on the property tax. A lot of the municipal state aid funds are spoken for before they're even spent, because as state projects come through municipalities, there's a cost participation requirement that absorbs a lot of those resources and is unavailable for their local needs. For bicycle and pedestrian initiatives in Greater Minnesota, We provide for a $6 million, $3 million, and $3 million general fund appropriation. We establish an active transportation program. We also allow for $2.5 million or $5 million over the biennium for safe routes to school. We've been talking a lot and hearing a lot about freight and freight issues throughout the state, congestion and safety issues, the introduction of a number of new oil trains on a weekly basis that come through our communities. People are very concerned about the safety of those, and so we provide for an assessment on the Class 1 railroads of $32 million or so per year for the purpose of improving our crossings, whether at grade or grade separated, and for paying in MnDOT, a governor's initiative to establish a freight rail safety office that would also undertake some responsibilities with respect to freight and its economic role in our state and in our shipping needs. Madam President, that's the broad overview of the major initiatives. I'm going to speak to the spreadsheet very, very quickly to go over some of the specific appropriations that we make that are a little smaller in focus and don't touch on some of the major initiatives that we have. I'll look at aeronautics first and mention that we are appropriating $11 million. That's the remainder of the $15 million that was repaid to this fund after the $15 million had been taken out to address deficits in years past. We've repaid those dollars. We appropriated $4 million in the last biennium. They've now developed enough programs and projects in place to be able to expend the remaining $11 million. We provide for the purchase of a new state plane. There was a request for two. We provide for one, and that's going to cost $5 million in general fund dollars. I mentioned already the bike ped active transportation initiatives. Sprinkled throughout, and I won't touch on these, are the initiatives to provide for some general restoration of overall agency administration needs for restoration of their buying power, some of the ground that they lost to inflation over the years, and then, of course, their changes in salaries and benefits of 1.8%. Except I'll mention before I forget that in the State Patrol we provide for an additional increase for salaries and benefits of 3%. In the freight, we talked about the freight sector as well. I should mention that we have a one-time appropriation out of the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Fund for some trackage in Senator Chamberlain and or Senator Kiffmeyer's district. Some emergency repairs that are needed, so we make a grant out of what we call the Mercy Fund of $143 million. In the state roads program, we have a $7.8 million appropriation out of trunk highway funds to do improvements to Jay Cook State Park roads that were ruined by flooding in years past. The damage was so extensive that that roadway wasn't ready to receive those repairs until now. We provide some additional dollars for managing environmental issues. This is all in the program planning and delivery area. We provide for some funding to study a road user charge working group, a Senator Franzen initiative. And then we develop a land conveyance office, and we fund that through the receipt of dollars from the sale or lease of or sale of excess land, the lease of excess land at MnDOT. There's going to be so much of that going on in the next few years that they needed a dedicated unit at MnDOT to pay close attention to that function. In the state road construction area, which most people are most interested in, we provide for the additional resources of almost $500 million to construct new trunk highways in the state. In this biennium, that grows to $550 million in the next biennium. That doesn't count an additional $100 million that comes in through federal funds. We provide for a $105 million appropriation for the turnbacks that I mentioned earlier, a one-time appropriation of $5 million for noise barriers, and then we do a one-time funding of a state right-of-way acquisition fund. That's a loan fund, so that'll get that established. So when it's possible to purchase right-of-way ahead of time in order to secure a more advantageous price, We do that on a rotating or revolving loan basis, working with local units of government. Moving on to local roads, as I mentioned earlier, significant new dollars will flow through county state aid highway system. And Madam President, members, you'll see on your desk in one of these handouts some runs that show exactly how much your particular county will benefit from the increases to county state aid highways. For municipal state aid highways, the MSA program, we provide an additional $100 million over the biennium. I don't think I mentioned the county state aid amount. Well, you can read that for yourself. And then some of the other local road initiatives, we provide for, I think I had mentioned the $10 surcharges on two different vehicle transactions. Those provide for about $57 million over the biennium for both small cities and large cities. We provide a general fund appropriation for local bridges, the local bridge replacement program. These are our small bridges owned by local units of government across the state, of $10.75 million. Again, that's general fund. And we have a one-time appropriation to assist with the construction of highways, state highways on tribal lands of $5 million. We have a small item. It's kind of a shift on tort claims. Rather than appropriating those dollars directly to management and budget, we appropriate those dollars to the Department of Transportation. In the Metropolitan Council, like I mentioned earlier, Metropolitan Council isn't going to need the same level of general fund support for basic operations, and so we reduced that amount by $39.3 million. In the Department of Public Safety, this particular budget division has responsibility for the State Patrol, Capital Security, and some of the administrative elements of the public Department of Public Safety. The remainder of public safety functions are in Senator Latz's division. We provide, like I said, for the increases in salaries insurance. We create a new labor relations manager position. That's only $130,000. That was an analysis of the ratio of support they have in their human resources function to the size of their agency. We allow for the purchase of a fixed-wing aircraft. That is a request of $975,000. Much of that function, though, will be for Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and other sorts of law enforcement functions not appropriate to be paid for out of the Trunk Highway Fund, so we allow for $500,000 of that, which would be used for traffic and enforcement purposes, an appropriate Trunk Highway Fund purpose. So about half of the airplane will be paid for out of trunk highway funds. We allow for the state trooper escort rate to be increased to the level that it actually costs. We allow the commissioner to establish that amount. We provide for that appropriation over the biennium of $300,000. Capital Security, it was the recommendation of the Capital Security Task Force Working Group to provide for a uniform set of services in the entire Capitol campus, regardless of the building, regardless of the agency. The past practice had been to contract with those particular agencies. And as a result of that, those contract negotiations, every building, I think it even varied from floor to floor, would tailor their level of security services. It was a very real hodgepodge of what the public and what employees could expect in terms of security of their workplace, and it's recommended that we create a more uniform set of services and simply pay for those out of the general fund. And so there's a ongoing base appropriation of $3.1 million for Capitol campus security purposes, and we eliminate this agency-to-agency, building-to-building contracting mechanism. In driver and vehicle services, we create a data services unit. For the purpose, we remember that big discussion about the purchase of basic data by the data miners who use those data on drivers and vehicles and transactions for commercial purposes. And that issue has been worked out and resolved to a large degree, but an outcome of that is that a data services unit is being created in driver and vehicle services, and it's paid for both out of the vehicle services funds as well as the driver services funds. We In our deliberations and in our examination of the driver and vehicle services functions, we discovered that vehicle services contracts with the Department of Corrections for the purpose of manufacturing license plates. They use trunk highway funds to pay the costs of that contract. But then, of course, they sell those license plates. We buy our license plates. We replace them every 7 years for a standard plate. It's $10. But they keep those dollars, and they deposit them into the vehicle services fund. So, in effect, what happens is we use trunk highway funds to subsidize the manufacture and production of plates, and we don't make that a self-supporting activity. So we decided to change that. The net benefit of that is, of course, that $16.5 million remains in the highway user tax distribution fund for the purpose of building roads and delivering our basic transportation functions, as is constitutionally mandated. We allow for the fees to increase by $2.50 when we replace our license plates. We slow down the replacement schedule from every 7 years to every 10 years, and we solve that problem fairly handily. We have a small amount that we carry for a change in practice. Part of the insurance verification efforts to make sure that as many drivers as possible are insured. A task force met. Senator Kent was one of the leaders of that effort. They've come up with a number of recommendations. Many of those we can't actually get to until we upgrade the technology in the department. That's still a few years down the road. But one practice that we'll start with in the coming year, should this idea become law, is to simply ask folks, rather than to check a box to attest that they have insurance, attest to insurance by writing down the name of the insurance company, the policy number, and the expiration date. They don't have to provide any documentation or anything like that. It's simply on their own word, but it provides just a little bit higher bar, a little bit higher threshold. Of course, folks might show up at the office and not know that that's a new requirement, not have their basic insurance information with them. So part of the expense of making that new requirement is making sure that people are well informed ahead of time. That's going to create a little bit of cost. We do have the driver's license for all, creating the driver's license for driving purposes only initiative of Senator Champion's in the bill, and that carries a small cost as well. We eliminate a $1,000 appropriation from the highway user tax distribution fund that gets sent to vehicle or to driver services for the purpose of generating letters to folks who have driven off without paying for their gasoline. Those letters haven't been sent to anyone in many, many years, so we're saving $1,000 to the highway user tax distribution fund. We're very proud of that. We have an effort to streamline our water permitting process and perhaps take over, have the federal government delegate some of our federal environmental requirements and streamline and align those water permitting requirements for transportation purposes. And so we pay for a feasibility study out of the county state aid highway administrative funds. And so we'll know in a short amount of time whether or not that's a feasible improvement in efficiency that we can undertake here in Minnesota. With that, Madam President, that's the overview of much of the appropriation initiatives. I'll go quickly to the I'll jump to Article 6 to go into some of the policies that support what we're undertaking, as well as some policies that I haven't yet touched on. In Section 1, we have the vehicle registration and title transfer of $10. Section 2, we have the distribution of that 5% set aside. You can see how that breaks out. We established the county turnback account for the purpose of restoring county state highways before they're turned back to county purposes. Likewise, for municipal turnbacks in Section 4, Section 4 also touches on county turnbacks. We established that the restoration of trunk highways to revert for counties is a trunk highway purpose, so we can spend those trunk highway dollars for that purpose, and that would also allow us to spend on some of those that have occurred in the past. We do. There has been this discussion for a long time about the distribution formulas on the old money and the new money for the county state aid highway system, and we established kind of as a function of law rather than trying to calculate what is old money and what is new money. All the dollars that flow into the county state aid highway system, we classify as 60% what we call old money, or the formal name is the apportionment fund, and 32% of those dollars, what we used to call the new money, which we also refer to as the excess sum, 32% of those dollars, and that just kind of unravels a very, very complicated system of determining how much flows to each county. The next many, many sections have to do with that license plate issue and the Department of Corrections, and that brings us up to Section 29, the vehicle registration renewal fee of $10, again, for the small and the large cities. We have a conditional vehicle registration that we've allowed to occur for free. We now charge a little bit of money when dealers or whomever come in and get a regular registration that they've had on a conditional basis. We make sure that they pay for that transaction. We establish those small city and the large city accounts in the next section. We discuss the distribution of the motor vehicle lease tax in Section 33 that I presented on earlier. In Section 35 is how we discuss the distribution of the motor vehicle sales tax to get some additional dollars over to Greater Minnesota Transit. Section 36, we allow Minneapolis and St. Paul separately of each other to enact an ordinance for the purpose of creating a fee or a little surcharge on parking stalls for various transportation pedestrian-related purposes in the central business district, the downtowns of each of those cities. Section 37 repeals the existing treatment of the 5% set aside out of the high user tax distribution fund. Article 7, I'm going to try to speed this up a little bit. There's a lot to get through here, but I want to be sure to present these items because this is mostly for the benefit of the public who's looking on. We allow the Department of Transportation to retain the benefit of software that they've developed and sold to other agencies around the country. Section 2, I believe, the next section, we're going to have an amendment to delete that. That's just a carryover. I'll get back to that. We might not keep delete. There is one tiny section we do have to delete. I just can't remember what it is. Section 3, we allow for transfers of unencumbered balances between various programs in the Trunk Highway Fund or in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund that the Commissioner of Transportation uses. We allow for those transfers to occur, but with some communication, some disclosure, some guidelines for making those transfers. We create a straight right-of-way loan account that I talked about. That's the loan account that we fund for $2 million. We establish the land conveyance unit that I talked about earlier. Section 6 provides for utilities to pay for relocation of those utilities in the public right-of-way with respect to trunk highways as they have to do for roads that are controlled by local units of government. We allow for owners of towed recreational vehicles to pay their vehicle registration taxes either once or every 3 years. That's the Senator Torres-Ray initiative. We provide for a small penalty for late payment of tabs. Doesn't ever exceed $100. It's $25 per month for late payment. I believe Section 8 and Section 10 touch on that. The 10-year replacement of our license plates is in Section 9. We allow for flexibility in allocating federal funds for state aid projects so that those projects can be, so those dollars can be used most efficiently. And then the next number of sections have to do with firefighters who die in the line of duty, and those, in particular, those firefighters who are volunteer firefighters working for municipalities and townships, in particular, so that they, so that their dependents and their spouses receive health care benefits, much in the same way that the professional firefighting service does, and that that takes us up to Section 16 or 17, and there's another section that involves that. That issue as well. Section 16 has to do with the escort services and pricing for those. We allow for air transportation services, the charging for air transportation services to provide for replacement of aircraft in the future. We add to the right-of-way loan fund transit-related purposes in the metropolitan area. We presently do that for right-of-way acquisition for roads. If there's an opportunity to acquire right-of-way for transit purposes, they can participate in this revolving loan fund. And then there was a major initiative in 2008 on efficiencies, and we asked the Commissioner of Transportation to identify which of those recommendations have been enacted and the resulting efficiencies and savings to department operations. Moving on to Section 8, we have the Small Trucks Initiative from Senator Westrum. We have what's called a driveway and transit license. So this is when we're transporting vehicles, and that's a Senator Peterson provision. We have a breast cancer awareness license plate, Senator Rosen initiative carried by Senator Peterson in our committee. Again, small trucks in Section 4, a $100 restoration fee for the International Fuel Tax Agreement license when those are lapsed. In order to reinstate those, it'll cost $100 now. More small truck provisions in Section 6, 7, the insurance attestation change in procedure of Senator Kent's in Section 8. The driving license, driver's license for all, is what this bill is known by, creating the driving for driving purposes only license, starts at Section 9, Senator Champion's initiative, and that carries us all the way to Section 15. Section 16 establishes the active transportation programs within MnDOT, the Metropolitan Council, and the County's Transit Improvement Board, and some of the criteria and eligibility for those competitive grants. That's a Senator Peterson initiative. Bringing us up to Section 17, we establish a minimum of $60 million in federal funds for the purpose of paying for bike ped facilities. This is in Greater Minnesota. That's in addition to the appropriations that I mentioned earlier. We create a major local bridges account. We don't fund it, but we create a major local bridges account in Section 18. The purpose we do that, members, is so that we have this major local bridges, the budget buster bridges, and we'll fund that account separately so they're not competing with our smaller local bridges, a strong sentiment that I heard as I traveled around the state looking at the issues and challenges and opportunities that we have in our communities in Greater Minnesota. The railroad assessment you'll find on Section 19. The eligibility of uses for the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Fund is expanded to include improvements at rail yards in Section 20. We bring down the local cost share participation for improvements at locally owned, particularly the small municipal airports in Section 21. That way more of these projects can qualify for those dollars that we appropriated that I discussed earlier. A discussion and an analysis of the feasibility of a potential commuter rail in the I-394 corridor, a Senator Bonhoff initiative, requiring that we prepare an EIS for the Crystal Railroad connection. That's been the source of much anxiety between the BNSF and the CN line that would be linked together out there. Section 24 has to do with Senator Champion's initiative. We do establish a public-private partnerships initiative in Section 25, a joint initiative of myself and Senator Peterson. We tried to mightily to improve our project selection and evaluation process and try to figure out how exactly the Department of Transportation develops its surface transportation improvement program of projects. The Road User Charge Working Group has established Senator Franz's initiative in Section 27. Section 28, we allow the Metropolitan Council and Hastings to work on developing transit service to Hastings, and Hastings would, if that were to be successful, come into the transit taxing district. An examination of the organizational effectiveness of the Department of Transportation, Senator Kent initiative, Section 29. We have the Advisory Committee on Non-Motorized Transportation recommend a project evaluation and selection process. This is on bike, ped, and active transportation initiatives. We have the Commissioner of Management and Budget report to us on all the uses of the Trunk Highway User Fund, our ongoing attempt to make sure that those funds are used for their constitutionally dedicated purposes and there's no what we call leakage from the fund. And then we ask the Commissioner to work with the state aid office to figure out what roadway standards are appropriate and linking together how we design the geometrics and geometry of roads that function in largely a similar manner. County state aid highways, trunk highways and these large arterials in our municipal state aid streets. With that, Madam President, I do have that one minor amendment. I just need to confirm quickly that I remember exactly what this is. This would be the A-15 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-15 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend House File Number 4, the unofficial engrossment as follows, page 59. This is the A-15 amendment.
Madam President, point of order, are we under call?
Senator Ortman, could you state your point of order again?
Madam President, are we under call?
We are not under call.
May I impose a call of the Senate?
Senate is under call.
Right, I'll do it sight unseen.
Senator Ortman, do you want to lift the call?
Madam President, I move that the call be dispensed with.
Senator Ortman moves that further proceedings under the call be dispensed with and the sergeants be ordered to bring in the absent members. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The sergeant will bring in the absent members. We are back to the A-15 amendment. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Madam President, so this just takes out just a little vestige of a bill that had been a part of a Senator Coonan initiative that had been deleted, so it's just a little technical cleanup.
Any discussion on the A-15 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Madam President, I will stand for questions or amendments.
Are there any questions, amendments? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to offer the A-31 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-31 amendment.
Senator Peterson B. moves to amend House File Number 4, the unofficial engrossment as follows, page 51, and this is the A-31 amendment.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I just spoke with the author. I don't think there's any opposition to the amendment. This adds an effectiveness date to a bill last session that didn't have an appropriate effectiveness date with regard to the collection of some revenue around a certain couple specialty license plates.
Any discussion on the A-31 amendment? Senator Dibble.
Well, to be more precise, I hate the underlying idea, but the die is cast. And this plate exists, and I guess what I understand is that it's ready to go, and they're ready to collect the resources. So while I'm not crazy about these specialty license plates for the purpose of collecting dollars for private charitable purposes and chunking up our license plates, this deed has been done.
Any more discussion on the A-31 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Seeing none, we'll move to Senator Dahl.
Madam President, I have an A-33 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-33 amendment.
Tried to sneak in.
Senator Dahl moves to amend House File Number 4, the unofficial engrossment as follows, page 33, and this is the A-33 amendment.
Senator Dahl.
Madam President, members, on this just makes some changes, some language currently in the bill. On page 33, after line 33, there is a section that talks about the metro tax that would would not go into effect if four counties decided to opt out. What this does is address, for example, Scott County, if they went ahead and did a half a cent sales tax, but this particular tax that they would have to opt out of would be a 3/4 cent, they would have to pay a quarter or a 1 1/4. So we're just trying to make up the difference here in case a county has decided to go out and get a tax on their own for the Minnesota Transportation Sales and Use Tax imposed by that county. So I have talked to the author about this, and I believe he's amenable.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, members, yes, I think this is a very reasonable proposal. I know that Senator Dahl developed this in conjunction with Senator Pratt, and I think this is a good amendment to support.
Any more discussion on the A33 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. President. I have the A30 amendment.
Secretary will report the A30 amendment.
Senator Scalzi moves to amend House File Number 4, the unofficial engrossment, as follows, page 32, and this is the A30 amendment.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I have spoken with the author about this. Excuse me. This amendment is related to the transit tax in the metro region. I have a handout that I've distributed of the transit plan for 2030 from the Metropolitan Council. It's a plan that looks sort of like a couple of spiders. This amendment establishes a goal that 40% of the transit tax be allocated to the East Metro, where 40% of the people reside. As you can see on the handout I provided, the transit lines that have been funded or are in complete or in preliminary engineering are defined by the solid lines on the left side of the map. The dotted lines on the right side of the map are the East Metro lines, which are not yet complete. Some are ready, some are not. Minneapolis is on the left, St. Paul is on the right. And the dotted lines show go into the counties of Ramsey, Washington, and Dakota. I have introduced this idea for 2 years in a row now, and I have bipartisan co-authors. We're not asking for more than what we pay, but we're just preparing for equity for the future. And this amendment establishes a goal that the transit tax be allocated 40% to the East Metro in the future, where 40% of the people live. And so I would appreciate your support on this amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I appreciate the Senator Scalzi's work and effort, and even working with me as recently as today to, rather than to make a hard 40% annual commitment, that we develop a goal. I actually think that's entirely, I think that ultimately is what will happen, that the entire region at some point along the way, as we start to build out the 2030 plan, every region will benefit and then some from the effort that all parts of the region are going to go to. And in fact, you know, the proposal we discussed earlier, modifying a little bit with Senator Dahl's amendment, creates a real potential for any four counties to band together and create a negotiation with the region for the purpose of participating in these transit, raising resources and revenue for these transit efforts. And so the fact that this establishes a goal of awarding grants, you know, to treat the east side equitably, which has been the source of a lot of anxiety over reasonable years, is a good compromise. So I appreciate Senator Scalzi's work, and I support the amendment.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition to this amendment. I think it is a slippery slope, as they say, when we pick one part of the region and put that in legislation with an aspirational phrase like a goal based on population. Within the overall language of this bill, there's a formula that brings in Ramsey and Hennepin County to participate in the distribution of the leased motor vehicle tax. And the way they're brought into this formula says that, and I understand the thinking, is that if you divided this formula based on population, that when Hennepin and Ramsey came in, they would swoop up all the dollars. And so Senator Dibble has put forward a formula whereby Ramsey's population is only allocated 50% of its population, and Hennepin is allocated 25% of its allocation, and the other counties get 100% of their population's allocation. I thought that formula was unfair, and I disagreed with it, but I understood that it was a delicate compromise, and so did not prepare an amendment to have equity with regard to our population. But then I hear an amendment being brought forward that says, based on the population of the East Metro being 40% of the metro, that they should have a goal of having 40% of the dollars. Well, to that end, one would say in the MVEST, leased vehicle tax, that Hennepin should have its share of population. So I think that if we actually devolve into a conversation that pits our communities against each other, none of us are going to win in that scenario. So I would say this is not a direction that we ought to go, and I would urge members to vote against the amendment, and I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call requested, roll call granted. Senator, okay. Is there any more discussion on the A30 amendment? Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote,
vote for it because it's you.
The secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes and 21 nays, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. I offer the A20 amendment. It is under Senator Dibble.
Senator Dibble's name? Okay,
correct.
The secretary will report the A20 amendment.
Senator Jensen moves to amend House File Number 4, the unofficial engrossment, as follows, page 90, and this is the A20 amendment.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment deals with the disaster aid that we allocated, the $3 million appropriation. There was a time frame that unfortunately some of the projects have not been able to complete their engineering design analysis and construction plan for their development. And so what this amendment does is extend the deadline to June 30th of 2017 so that those 10 projects can also be part of the 1.3 general obligation that we appropriated.
Any discussion on the A20 amendment? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Yes, I support this amendment. Senator Jensen explained these are some of the emergency dollars that we appropriated earlier this year, and these projects aren't quite yet ready to be completed by the deadline that's been established, so we give them another couple of years to finish those projects.
Any more discussion on the A20 amendment? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. I offer the A25 amendment.
Your name?
That's correct.
Yes. Secretary will report the A25 amendment.
Senator Jensen moves to amend House File Number 4, the unofficial engrossment as follows, page 95, and that is the A25 amendment.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment is in regards to the section for public-private partnerships. What I'm asking for in this amendment is to make sure that we also include surety bonds for performance on those types of projects, just like we do in other public projects. What the surety bond ensures is that the work that is being done can be paid for should the contractor or subcontractor not be able to complete or finish their work.
Is there any discussion on the A25 amendment? Senator Dibble.
Madam President, yes, I thank Senator Jensen for bringing this amendment forward, the A25. It's a standard good practice, and I support the amendment.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, would the author of the amendment yield?
She will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Jensen, just inquiring about this, I know it's a good practice. One of the things I hear from different folks out there at times is do we ever collect on these surety bonds, or is it just an expense that contractors have to go through the cost of doing this, but if there's ever a problem, we never seem to collect on projects. Do you know anything about that?
Senator Jensen.
Madam President and Senator Westrom, I am not aware or have with me the availability of what we have or haven't been paid out on these, but in legislation, we do have, for all the other projects that are public projects, in legislation that we need to ensure that the taxpayer dollars are protected in the indication, if something like that should happen, where the performance of the work is either not finished, and then the surety insurance would be available to us to get recommendations of either somebody to complete that work or to pay for having it completed by someone else. So this is just a protection that gives the public tax dollar protection in case something like that should happen. And we currently do that on all other public projects that are out there. What this amendment does is just to ensure that that practice continues, whether or not it's a public-private partnership or a regular public project.
Senator Westrom.
And Madam President, Senator Jensen, thank you. I would leave us with the caveat that this is a good practice. And maybe Chair Dibble, when you're going through and discussing this in a conference committee, assuming it goes on, I would just advise that we maybe do our due diligence and make sure that these surety bonds are really something that's worth requiring, because it does add cost to the projects. I know some years back we had a veterans home, I think in southern Minnesota, that there was problems with the contractor, and the state ended up just shelling out more money, and there should have been a bond on that project. And I remember there was a lot of scuttlebutt at the time that that's that wasn't being collected on. There maybe wasn't any way to collect on the mess-ups that were done by the contractor, and so it just drives the cost up, but then the state ends up paying for it in the end anyways. So if we're just doing it and not able to collect on them, it probably doesn't seem like a good practice either, and it locks a lot of small contractors out of being able to bid, because it does take some financial backing and some good credit by these companies in order to get these surety bonds. And so I just raised that issue, Senator Jensen. I think it's a good practice. I'll support your amendment, but as the author of it, and maybe as the chair moves us forward, we could just verify that it's in fact a good solid practice that benefits everybody involved.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Westham, I will you could take out a surety bond on my pledge to do that due diligence in conference committee. I know that there are some other mechanisms that we use as well. Should a contractor fail to perform, we can explore some of those, like holdbacks and withholds and that sort of thing. So we'll be sure to explore the fullness of this subject.
Is there any more discussion on the A25 amendment? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Secretary will then give House File 4 its third reading. Excuse me? Oh, I didn't. I asked. I paused. I waited. Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, they're drafting it. It's almost ready.
No other amendments. I'm sure someone will think of one if we wait too long. Stories, jokes. The Secretary didn't say third reading.
Madam President.
Senator Bonoff.
It is a simple amendment. I could do it as an oral amendment if you'd like.
How many words is it?
No. It's just deleting one formula and inserting a different formula.
Why don't you explain it? And okay. Hopefully by then we'll have the actual amendment.
Okay. So members, when I spoke against the Scalzi amendment, I mentioned that there's a formula within the overall bill that reallocates the least tax on motor vehicles. And the way that this particular tax, we passed a constitutional amendment, as many of you know, in 2006.
Senator Bonoff, we have it now, so we would just like to pause for a minute, report it, then it's officially in front of us. The Secretary will report the A51 amendment.
Senator Bonoff moves to amend House File Number 4. The unofficial engrossment as follows, page 56, and this is the A51 amendment.
Senator Bonoff, continue.
Thank you, Madam President. So we, the people of Minnesota passed a constitutional amendment in 2006 that says when you buy a vehicle, the tax you pay on that should flow directly to transportation. I was elected right in that time frame, and so I asked, how much tax do we raise when you lease a vehicle? And I remember meeting with the transportation people, and they said, oh, we've never separated it out. We don't know. And it took members 3 weeks to come back to me, and what we learned at that time was $45 million a year was coming from the tax when you lease a vehicle. So I carried a bill that session that said the leased vehicle tax should follow the same formula as the motor vehicle sales tax. That's what the public believed, in my opinion, when they voted for that tax. Well, since that time, that's never happened, and we have had iteration after iteration of using that money for general fund purposes in one way or another. Senator Dibble, finally, in this bill that you have before you, corrects that and says that that least motor vehicle tax, or a good part of it, is now going to go for the transportation needs of the seven county metro area. For a while, the collar counties were included, but Hennepin and Ramsey weren't included. So this formula finally puts Hennepin and Ramsey now able to take advantage of actually the money that does mostly come from the metro area. That's where lease tax, leased vehicles primarily occurs, is in the metro area. But for some reason, Senator Dibble in that formula said that that all the other counties would be allocated their share based on population. But because the population was so great in Ramsey and Hennepin, they were only going to get a part of it. And so 40% went to Ramsey, and or 50, and only 25 went to Hennepin. And so what this amendment does, it says, in fact, Hennepin County would get the same percentage as Ramsey County. So they wouldn't get their whole percentage. They would just, in fact, delete 0.25 and insert 0.4, so 40%.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate everything that Senator Bonhoff has said, and she's not wrong that a great deal of the revenue that's generated in Hennepin County, not just in the motor vehicle lease tax, but in the gas tax, the county state aid highway, the regular tax, as well as a number of other revenue and resources that we generate, don't wind up getting spent in Hennepin County. Hennepin County, City of Minneapolis are net exporters of a great deal of tax dollars to the metropolitan region and to the rest of the state. And I appreciate why Senator Bonhoff brought the amendment forward, because of the initiative of Senator Scalzi. That being said, I speak against this amendment because that's kind of how states function. There are economic centers, economic engines in some parts of the state. A lot of the effort that goes on in other parts of the state support that economic activity. People come to Hennepin County and work in jobs that don't live there. That's part of how you can attribute some of the effort that occurs in Hennepin County. A lot of the manufacturing that occurs from the raw materials in Hennepin County come from other parts. I mean, there's just a whole, it's a very, very dynamic, interactive, iterative system, and that's why where the economic engines are, some of the additional resource that gets created then is turned back out and spread across the state. Senator Scalzi's amendment maybe would have been, had a little bit more time to think about it, more artfully worded as saying all parts of the region will share over a period of time roughly in the proportion of the effort that they expend for the purpose of supporting this overall transit purpose. But that's not how the amendment was drafted, and in fact, in working with Senator Scalzi over the last hour or two this morning, we reached compromise rather than making a hard 40%. We created a goal language, and I'll just also mention that Senator Scalzi handed out a map. Map is a little bit outdated. The more up to date map shows some more significant transitway development, the Gateway, Snelling, BRT, and some others. And so what Senator Scalzi is hoping to achieve probably will occur anyways. The reason we did this with the motor vehicle lease tax is because we know that the county state aid highway system in the metropolitan area really goes lacking. And we know that in Hennepin County itself, there's a tremendous amount of need, absolutely. But if Hennepin County were to count half or more of its population, it would absorb a great deal of those dollars. A lot of Hennepin County's mobility needs, because it's dense with the greatest population, is going to be in transit and transitway investment and development. Whereas in Washington, Carver, Dakota, other counties, a lot of the transit functions are going to occur on roads and those county state aid highways. Both their capacity and maintenance and safety improvements are going to be needing those investments. So that's why we ended up with the 25% threshold for Hennepin County's population, 50% for Ramsey, and then allow all the other counties to count their full population. If we succeed at some point, which I hope we do, an effort that Senator Bonhoff has been mightily striving for a number of years, of thinking about the motor vehicle lease tax as a transportation-related tax for this purpose, much like the motor vehicle sales tax is, we can maybe have that will bring an additional $22 million into this shared pool of funds, and we can talk about maybe once again thinking about how those are distributed across the seven counties. So I would oppose the Bonhoff A51.
Senator Bonhoff.
Madam President, going back to what Senator Dibble said, that if he could have taken some time and worked the language of Senator Scalzi's bill to say rather that each of the regions is entitled to the amount of resources that they generate, I think, in fact, you'd have a very different percentage for this amendment. You'd probably see a much greater number. So I'm not asking for that. What I am saying is that if you're going to assume that because you want to do a certain broad-based distribution that you're only going to count a certain percent of Ramsey's, then I think it's only fair that you would use the same percent in Hennepin. And the question I asked in finance, and I have yet to get the answer, is I actually wanted to see how much of the revenue that the lease vehicle tax is generated from comes from Hennepin County, because I have been told that it's actually a good deal of that amount. And so what I'm trying to do is insert some fairness for those who we represent that says if you're going to have a tax on your lease vehicle, that you ought to at least share equally in how those revenues are distributed. So I would say that Senator Dibble's very explanation for why he didn't support this is in contrast to what is being said. So I would urge members to remember the constitutional amendment's premise that said the public voted yes, that they believe when you buy a car, that money should go towards transportation. And they didn't mean whether you buy it or lease it. They really meant when you bring it home from wherever you get it, that's buying it. So I would ask members to give this real consideration. I understand Senator Dibble doesn't support it, but I would ask members to consider it.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to urge members to vote no on the Bonhoff Amendment. I think it's important to reflect on some of the history of this distribution. In 2008, the last time that the state increased transportation funding, the ring counties, the five counties that were discussed earlier, there was a compromise reached that said that their distribution would make up for the fact that the second quarter percent of the originally proposed half-cent metro sales tax for roads of regional significance was left out of the final 2008 transportation bill. So that remaining quarter cent that was authorized by and is collected in Anoka, Dakota, Washington counties, as well as Hennepin and Ramsey counties, goes to CTIB for building and operating transitways. But if you think back to the transitways we've funded so far, the transitways that have been funded, the blue and green lines, originate or terminate in Hennepin and Ramsey counties. So through 2013, 82% of CTIB grants went to lines operating exclusively in those two counties. So arguably, almost all the economic benefit in terms of increased economic development went to Hennepin and Ramsey counties, where the blue and green lines are located. I think Senator Dibble has reached a fair compromise in that he has recognized that the ring counties need to have some more flexibility in terms of how that additional sales tax is generated. And so that's why keeping the compromise that is reached in Senator Dibble's bill is so important to these five suburban ring counties. So in that respect and for others, I would encourage members to vote no on the Bonhoff Amendment.
Any more discussion? Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, you know, I'm not as well versed in the details of these transportation formulas as some members here in the Senate are, but it just seems to me if Senator Dibble's compromise was a valid one, then Senator Scalzi's amendment distorts that whole process because it undermines the compromise and the balance and instead sets an artificial target proportional to population. If Hennepin County is doing the heavy lifting here in terms of putting money into the system, seems to me it's fair that Hennepin County reaps its proportional benefit. And at least if we're going to start messing around with the proportions, with the goals, the aspirations over the course of the 2030 plan, as Senator Scalzi proposes, then we have to readjust other parts of the formula as well to account for these changes. Exactly what Senator Bonhoff was talking about is happening now, which is we're pitting region against region against region, and we're doing it on the Senate floor. This is not a very good place to be making this kind of Senate or transportation funding policy and formula decisions. But since we've engaged now, because this body passed Senator Scalzi's amendment, I think we need to engage fully and be more proportional and more fair to the county that's putting the lion's share of the money into the system, and that's Hennepin County. So what you have before you is an amendment to do just that, to equalize it, not even to go to 100%, just to go to 50% in the formula for Hennepin County, the same as with an East Metro County, Ramsey County. And actually, the amendment says 40%. I think the original intent in my conversations with Senator Bonhoff was to do it at 50% or 0.5, and that got lost in the translation as the amendment was hurriedly prepared in written form for this body. So I would propose to amend the amendment to change the 0.40 to 0.50. I make that motion.
The Secretary will report the oral motion.
Senator Latz moves to amend the A51 amendment as follows. Page 1, line 3, delete 0.4 and insert 0.5.
Is there any discussion on the Latz amendment to the amendment? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does not prevail. The amendment to the amendment is not adopted. We have the original A51 Bonhoff amendment in front of us. Is there any more discussion? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz made a good point about the progression of this. I will point out that with Senator Scalzi's amendment, I was actually a co-author on that bill initially, but I voted against it here because I understand that what Senator Dibble has arrived at in terms of the compromises is one that seeks to hold everybody harmless, allow important growth and development to happen in the ring counties where there are extensive needs. When I speak of the county that I live in and part of my district, which is Washington County, we have significant growth and significant needs. We have the wheelage tax already. We're doing what we can. But to have the reduced effects of this in this county, as in all the counties, would be a significant cut and would make a negative effect on those communities.
Senator Bonhoff.
Madam President, roll call requested.
Roll call requested, roll call granted. Is there any more discussion on the A51 amendment? Secretary will take the roll.
You're sort of
All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 18 ayes and 41 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Seeing no further amendments, the secretary will give House File 4 its third reading.
House File Number 4, a bill for an act relating to transportation, establishing a budget for transportation, appropriating money for transportation.
Secretary will take the roll.
Madam President, a few of us had wished to speak to the bill.
Oh, I apologize. Usually I do let people speak. I'm sorry. We haven't started the roll yet. All right, discussion on the bill. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Well, you know, we've got a pretty good bill before us, and I'm going to vote for it, but I'm very frustrated now because it seems that, as in other situations now, the members from the state who are from all over the state are perfectly happy to raid the economic engine of the state of Hennepin County, to take money and distribute it all over the rest of the state, the rest of the metro area, other parts of the state. You're perfectly happy to take it for yourselves. But when you start making the same effort in your counties that Hennepin County makes in your transportation funding, then let's talk further.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Madam President, I'd like to request a roll call as well, if that's been...
We have a roll call on final passage, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, as you consider your decision on this bill, I'd like to draw your attention to the spreadsheet that was distributed by Senator Dibble relating to this bill. And if you'd be so kind, I'd ask you to flip to page 11, second to the last page. Members, you'll see those shaded columns that run across the page there, and you'll see the very first shaded column is a biennium of 14 and 15, just last session. And then if you move across that spreadsheet to the fourth shaded column, members, you'll see the current biennium that we're discussing right now. And what I want you to notice is on line 444. As you move across to the first shaded column, you see the word all, and then the next column, it's empty, it's a zero. And as you move across line 444 all the way to the fourth shaded column, members, I hope you're sitting down, members, it says 1.9 billion dollars. Members, that's what this bill is going to raise if you decide to support this bill. Members, you're raising in new taxes and new fees $1.9 billion. I hope you remember that we also have a surplus, members, of $2 billion. So you start doing the math on that, members, with your vote, positive vote on this bill, depending on what we have coming yet in this body in the next few weeks, you're going to be looking at spending, raising and spending an additional $4 billion. And I wanted to make sure you're clear and understand the intent. Members, when we were in the Transportation Committee, one of the major features of this bill is the gross receipts tax. It raises the lion's share, a significant part of the new revenue. Members in committee, we heard testimony from members of the community that came in and talked about how their customers or themselves would roll into the gas station and put $5 or $10 of worth of fuel in their car. I was a little surprised by that because I'm thankful, members. I'm thankful I've never been in a position in my life where I've had to go in and put in $5 of gas into my gasoline tank
And I'm grateful for that. In fact, I thank God and I thank the Lord that I have never been in a position where I've had to go into gas station and all I had in my pocket was to put $5 or $10 in a gas tank. Members, that's what's going on at our gas stations all across the state. What this gross receipt tax, members, does, as you know, raises significantly the tax that's going to be charged on a gallon of gas. In fact, if you do the math on that, it works out to be about $350 a person, $1,400 for a family of four. In the district I represent in St. Cloud, we have many, many large families. And I'll have to tell you, the heritage in those large families used to be Germans. But they're no longer Germans. Members, those large families are refugees that have come in primarily from North Africa. It is very common for them to have 6, 7, or 8 children. Members, for a family of 8, this bill is going to cost $2,800 more a year for that family. In addition to that, I hope you consider we're celebrating, multiple news sources reported this morning, we're celebrating our 4th week in a row of rising gas prices. Hopefully by now, I hope that you're not naive. If you've not naive and done your research, you know the grocery tax, the higher the price of gallon goes, the more the tax is going to be and more revenue is going to be raised. And so the higher the price of that gallon of gas, the higher the tax is going to be and the higher the bill at the gas pump. Now, members, you combine that with a couple of items I had distributed on your desk. Members, if this bill passes this afternoon, we're going to have the 3rd highest gas tax in the country, and we're going to have the highest gas tax in the Midwest. We've had much discussion, members, this session about the Better Trucks Initiative. It's a bill that was authored by Senator Jensen, Senate File 309, that would have raised the amount of weight that a truck, commercial vehicle, can haul on Minnesota state highways. Members, your support of this bill is going to take us up to the highest price per gallon in the Midwest, and we're going to have the lowest truck weights in the Midwest. It's an awful combination, members, to be the highest state in the Midwest with the highest gas tax and the lowest truck weights. In fact, this combination is so awful that this body, in their wisdom, has already made exceptions to the heavier trucks weights in this state. We know that right now, if you're involved in the timber industry, that you don't need to abide by those rules. We know now if you're involved in agriculture, you don't need to abide by those heavy truck weights rules. In fact, even this body just last year voted to expand our truck weights in the state of Minnesota to full freight in one DOT district. You may recall Senator Scoy's district was successful in bringing to this body just last session full freight truck expansion of the weights to MnDOT District number 4 in the northern west central part of this state. Members, I would argue that it's working well. One of the things that would allow these Minnesota's economy relating to these industries certainly would be a huge economic benefit. This bill offered local control. That's one of the deceptions that's been going around this building and this body on this particular issue. This bill absolutely, because it's tied into the agricultural section, the current agricultural exception we have for truck weights right now allows your local governments at the county level to veto or to not allow those trucks to operate in that capacity. This particular bill offered safer roads, allowing more axles, more brakes, per pound of weight on our Minnesota highways and certainly offered cost savings that this body is not moving forward. We heard testimony in committee from one road builder that he could have offered a 4.5% savings to that municipality that built that road. One of the other handouts I sent out to you was an article written to the St. Cloud Times that talked about how another road builder would offer on a regular basis about a 5% savings to those road projects. Members, the single biggest user of aggregates in the state of Minnesota for road construction is our municipalities, whether that be the township, the county, the state, or our federal roadways. The other side, you'll see in that same article down towards the bottom, an example cited in terms of the demolition of the Metrodome. The fact is that there was 50,000 truckloads of recycled concrete that came out of that site when the Metrodome was demolished and torn down. Members, if you could have increased the truck weights on those vehicles just 10%, you would have had 5,000 less vehicles on our highways coming out of downtown Minneapolis. You would have burned tens of thousands of gallons less of diesel fuel and certainly put our roadways in better shape than they are now. That's the type of savings, and that's the type of economic impact that this bill would have had it had a chance to be included. Members, as you consider this bill, I would ask you to turn back again to the spreadsheet, page 11. Take a look at that increase in spending. We're going from zero to $1.9 billion in increased fees and taxes, and ask yourself, is that the right direction for your communities and the districts that you serve?
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm amazed. I really am. The DFL legislature and the governor last biennium raised taxes $2 billion, the largest tax increase in state history. Those taxes led to a $2 billion surplus. $2 billion surplus. And despite what the governor says, that is overtaxation above what the state needs. And so what's the reaction? The first reaction is we need more taxes for transportation. We have a $2 billion surplus. We have overtaxed the state of Minnesota $2 billion. And after the largest tax increase in state history, the legislature and the governor did not make transportation a priority at that time. And so now we're here saying we need more for Minnesota families and small businesses. As Senator Peterson said, $1.9 billion on top of the $2 billion that we already taxed. Now the advocates will say we need a dedicated source of revenue. We're the legislature. We dedicate those taxes. It's up to us to say what's a priority. We shouldn't be going back to Minnesota families. We shouldn't be asking for a new gas tax, a new sales tax, and new fees, all of which hit low and middle income Minnesotans the hardest. We should be taking care of ourselves within the budgets that we have, just like our Minnesota families and small businesses are. So members, I encourage you to vote against this bill.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to remind Minnesotans that when you go to buy groceries, this bill will increase your taxes because you're probably going to take your car so that you can fill up with your groceries for the week. When you turn 16 and you're very excited about getting your first job and you're going to drive to be a lifeguard, or to bag groceries. Your taxes are going up. Because no matter how much St. Paul takes, the Democrats are willing to take more. This is a tax on every Minnesotan who gets up and goes to work in the morning and comes home at night and takes the kids to ball practice. Every Minnesotan is going to feel the pain of this. And let's remember, members, we have a surplus. And if you read the report released at 11 a.m. 227 of this year, on the left-hand side, cheaper oil reduces capital expenditures in oil-related industries. Oil-related industries, that's gasoline, members, which the Democrats are taxing today. And the sentence following says, it allows consumers to divert spending towards non-gasoline purchases. So all the places you've been spending that money, members, it's coming to St. Paul. That's why I'm voting no.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, members, and to the public listening, I think Senator Benson, Senator Pratt, others have said this well. But this is a clear difference. What you see going on in this chamber today is the Republicans standing up for the hardworking families and the traveling public of Minnesota, trying to use a $2 billion surplus to help invest in roads and infrastructure rather than go to the well and to the traveling public, those that need gasoline or fuel to propel their vehicles, going to them for another $1.9 billion tax increase when we have a $2 billion surplus, as Senator Pratt pointed out. Senator Benson talked about who's this going to hit. Anybody that owns a vehicle or needs to travel and ride in a vehicle, anybody that needs freight hauled to their shop, to their school, to their home, or wherever they may need to go shopping to get that freight picked up, all of those vehicles are going to have to pay more. Just recently, in the past 6 months, we've all enjoyed a reprieve from these high gas prices. And now that the prices are down, the Democrats want to raise the price back up. And in this bill, members, there's not a ceiling on how much new tax could be collected under this new gross receipts sales tax of 6.5% per gallon. It's a minimum floor of 16 cents because they set the floor at $2.50, which is even below what you can buy gas today at. But then if it goes up, then you get to pay more. So the exact time when it's harder to fill your tank, if gas goes up to $3 or $4 a gallon, the Democrats are going to raise it even higher as it goes up. At least a gas tax that we've normally collected so many cents per gallon doesn't go up whether gas is $2 a gallon or $4 a gallon. This new sales tax on gasoline that is the governor and the Democrat Party are pushing here today goes up as you can least afford the increase in gas prices. But no, they protect the government expenditures by putting a floor in place at $2.50, which is higher than what you have to pay for gas today in most places. So members, for that reason alone, I urge you to vote no. But think about it. This is a revolutionary, a monumental step. If we go down this road, it's the largest gas tax increase we would hoist on our taxpaying public, on the traveling public, and it's a huge increase as gas prices go up. That does not make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to most Minnesotans that have to use their vehicles to go to church, to go get groceries, to pick up the children from school, run them to soccer practice, football practice, volleyball practice, track practice. All of those trips will be taxed, and you'll have to pay more. Just as we've all enjoyed the reprieve of these high gas prices. So the incentive would be to buy up your gasoline before the Democrats raise the price further under this bill. And it's not just gasoline that's going up. 15 years ago, Governor Ventura was elected in this state because people were sick and tired of the high cost of license tab fees. Governor Ventura made that a marquee campaign issue. We joined him, at least several of us, in working hard to bring those license tab fees back down. And in this bill, we raise the rate of license tab fees again. So not only does your gasoline go up, but your license tab fees go up as well, while we have a $2 billion surplus, and we got to ignore that. And finally, members, I was very disappointed. In Finance Committee, actually in Transportation Finance, we had a good provision go in this bill. There's lots of bill provisions in this bill that I cannot support. One that I could have supported, and it made sense, and Senator Bonhoff touched on a similar issue just a little while ago with her amendment. The amendment that I had put on in the Transportation Finance Committee was one to stop the siphoning of the gas tax fund over to the general fund. But the Democrats took that out in Finance Committee as well, because we'd rather keep the siphoning going on of the general fund. Even though we have a $2 billion surplus, we can't fix that. And members, what that is we have sales tax collected on all the road construction materials in our state. I've had this brought to me many times and discussed before, but as I got looking at it this year, as we focused and talked about trying to invest in our infrastructure, it made the most sense as a starting point. Our Constitution dedicates our gas tax to highway construction and maintenance, period. But the legislature for years has been siphoning off strategically, creatively, for whatever reason. Maybe they're just ignorant about it. But all construction materials pay a sales tax. Well, members, those dollars get paid before the road gets built. And where does that sales tax go? But it goes into the state's general fund to the tune of about $23 million a year that our road contractors have to add in their bids so they can pay the sales tax on the construction materials that go in our roads with the gas tax that's supposed to be dedicated to the building and maintenance of roads, and it gets shifted right over to the state's general fund. The language that got taken out of this bill would have shifted that back starting in 2019, so we don't continue siphoning off the dedicated funds from the gas tax that are supposed to go to roads, and instead it supplements and it's used in the state's general fund, not funding infrastructure, which is what the Constitution dedicated it to. And so, members, as I close, let me leave you with this illustration. Because if this works, and if this is constitutional, which I'm surprised it hasn't been challenged, anytime the state gets short or wants to spend money on something other than infrastructure, if we continue to let this go on, where the construction materials have to pay sales tax, the state could get creative, and let's just say, for example, they charge 100% sales tax on road construction material. They could now siphon off all of those sales tax right out of the gas tax fund into the state general fund and pay for the state's operations, and none of that constitutional money would be going to roads because the state general fund gets it instead. That's what my amendment would have stopped. It got stripped out of this bill in the Finance Committee. And members, I would urge your support no on this bill and send it back to committee. Let's do better.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, some in this chamber would have Minnesotans believe that this tax increase is necessary to pay for transportation. And I'm here to say this tax increase is absolutely not necessary. This bill proposes $1.9 billion in taxes, but we have a surplus in the state. The House bill doesn't have tax increases, and it funds a great deal more transportation. We do not need to pass this bill. But let's just talk about where this bill proposes to raise revenues to pay for more permanent spending in addition to the surplus. This bill on this floor today is a signal to all of Minnesota that the Democrat leadership in the Senate intends not only to spend the entire surplus, but also to tax Minnesotans $1.9 billion to add $1.9 billion in permanent spending to our budget. Those funds come from gas taxes, raising $787 million out of the pockets of Minnesota families and businesses to pay these gas taxes, 16.5 cents, as Senator Peterson said. This would make us the third highest in the nation. In addition, $600 million in metro area sales taxes. That's three quarters of a cent across the entire metro area, plus an additional one-quarter cent over the objections of the residents of Carver and Scott County by force. 1 cent across the Twin City metro area, that's going to hurt Minnesota families. It's going to hurt businesses. $191 million more will come out of the Minnesotans' pockets for vehicle registration taxes and valuation on their cars. The Minnesota Democrats, they want $90 million more for vehicle transaction filing fees, a $10 surcharge. They want another $24 million out of your pockets for motor vehicle title transfer surcharges. Members, all of these taxes are regressive. What that means is they are imposed on the poorest of the poor, and they hit poor Minnesota families harder than anybody else because it's a much larger portion of their income, and it's a much larger portion of the value of their vehicles. Members, make no mistake, this is a tax on the poorest of poor Minnesotans. In addition, this bill creates a new opportunity for Minneapolis and St. Paul to impose any amount of a fee on parking spots that they'd like to impose. Any amount at all. They can charge $10 on a private parking stall in one of our private parking ramps per year, or it could be $100. It could be $100,000, and there's no limit in this bill, and it could last forever. And they can spend it on any purpose they want. Let me just add one more insult to Minnesota drivers and Minnesota car owners. It's the new mileage tax study proposed in here. If you want to talk about a threat to mobility for Minnesotans, this is it. Let's just switch to a mileage tax and see how far our transportation system goes to getting goods up to the Iron Range and up to the reservations, where they have a hard enough time getting trucks up there at current costs. Members, this isn't just a transportation bill. As I said, it's not even needed. This bill is a war. It's a declaration of war on drivers, on car owners, on commuters who might have to commute into Minneapolis or St. Paul. It's a war on businesses that have premises in the Twin Cities. It's going to cost them a lot more to get their employees to work. It's a war on producers that have to pay for the costs of transportation. Those transportation costs get added into the price of goods and into the price of production. And the consumers then pay even more on top of the gas prices that they pay out of their pockets. The retailers of goods end up paying more for those transportation costs. Members, I thought the most interesting testimony in the tax committee about all these tax proposals was what the grocers had to say. The Minnesota Grocers Association came forward and talked to us and told us about the weekly basket of goods in Minnesotans' grocery cart. Do you know how much that weekly average is? Do you know how much it is? How much Minnesotans weekly spend on groceries? It's just $31. Minnesotans are living off of $31 in their food baskets each week. And if you look at this tax for 16.5 cents plus an inflationary measure going forward, Madam President, that's 12% of their weekly grocery budget. 12%. percent. Members, this is a disgraceful tax on the poor. It's very hurtful to our economy. I want to point out two more things. Number one, just today we learned just how overpriced these transit projects are that we are trying to fund with this huge $1.9 billion tax increase. The Southwest Light Rail project just went up in its price by $341 million, making it a proposed $2 billion. You can't raise enough sales taxes to pay our portion of those costs, nor would you ever want to. It will never provide value. Members, finally, what could be more embarrassing than a tax on the poorest of the poor in the state of Minnesota? Well, it would be even more embarrassing is the fact that this is a tax on the direct economic recovery we've been having in the state of Minnesota. Members, I asked folks to pass out for you our April forecast from the Minnesota Management and Budget Office. Should be on everybody's desk. I'd ask you to turn to the fourth page, I believe, where it talks about how the lower oil prices are benefiting Minnesota households and fueling, pun intended, we are fueling an economic activity, and you are going exactly against that economic activity. You are going to disrupt the economic growth that is helping our Minnesota families, helping our Minnesota businesses, and helping the state to recover from the recession. I'll just read a couple of sentences here. Lower gas prices are comparable to a tax cut, freeing up disposable income for spending on non-gasoline goods and services. That's where our families are paying for higher education. They're paying for that second used car. They're making roof repairs. They're spending $31 a week in groceries with that money. Going on, the economists estimate spending on gasoline in Minnesota will be as much as $2 billion less in 2015 than it was in 2014. How much does this bill spend? $2 billion. Raises $2 billion in taxes, there it is. It's going to spend it all. It's going to spend our economic recovery. This is equal to about 0.8% of disposable income and represents an average savings of more than $900 per Minnesota household. Imagine what else Minnesota families will have to do without if you take another $900 out of their budgets. This is providing a boost to state economic activity in 2015 and 2016. Members, when you vote green on this bill, you have to suspend all your disbelief, you have to suspend your logic, you have to suspend your gut instincts, and you have to suspend the best interests of Minnesota. Vote green, go ahead. Go ahead, vote green, because the leadership has said this is an important bill for negotiating purposes, but this bill is an embarrassment. Members, please vote for Minnesota families, Minnesota businesses, the poorest of the poor. Please vote for our economic activity. Vote no on this bill.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, here we are. We have the transportation bill. That was something that we have talked about during the interim and since session started. We all knew that transportation was essential to our future, and it is. Our economy rides on transportation. And so it is essential that we have reliable transportation, that we can maintain and construct that transportation. And I will say there are some things I do like in this bill before us today. I like the fact that we're requiring 15% efficiency from MnDOT. You know, that's what we should be doing. We are getting more efficient in every other sector of our society, and I think it's high time that government does too. So I'm glad to see that Senator Dibble has included this 15% efficiency requirement from MnDOT. And there's another piece that I think is very innovative that I really appreciate in this bill, and that is the pilot project for public-private partnerships and looking at the value capture method. That is innovation, and that is the way we should be seeking to fund our growing transportation needs. And that's why I'm disappointed that the greatest percentage of this bill, the significant financing in this bill for our aging transportation infrastructure system, is not of an innovative nature. The bill before us today actually doubles down on a declining source of revenue. That's what this bill does. Rather than being innovative in how can we best fund transportation, no, this bill doubles down on the declining source of revenue in the gas tax. It's been a declining source of revenue for several years, and it's going to continue as our vehicles get more efficient, as we encourage other modes of transportation, as compressed natural gas starts to make its way into the private system, into the private vehicles. So, members, this is the wrong way to fund transportation. There are some good things in this bill, but we are going about it the wrong way. We are looking backwards into our financing mechanisms instead of looking forward. And that's why I will be voting no on this bill.
Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm not going to belabor the point. We all know that this is going to cost more everywhere. It's going to cost more with groceries. It's going to cost more for delivery of pizzas. It's going to cost more when you take a cab. It's going to cost more. Right now, Minnesota's sales tax is 28.5 cents a gallon. This is the tax that keeps on taxing. At $3 a gallon, we keep talking about 16 cents, which is the floor of this tax increase. Let's start talking about when gas prices start going up, and they will. At $3 a gallon, that little 16 cents moves to 19.5 cents a gallon. At $3.50, as it gets more and more difficult for families to be able to afford gasoline, more and more difficult for businesses to be able to afford to operate, you're going to go to 22 cents a gallon. When gas prices spike up to $4 a gallon, we're going to see this gas tax go to 26 cents a gallon. We're doubling the amount of taxes, almost doubling the amount of taxes we're going to be taking out of the pockets of hardworking Minnesotans at a time when they can least afford it. Members, this was a bad idea 2 years ago when the DFL controlled both houses and the governorship. They brought this idea up in committee. It didn't go anyplace. I wonder why, because they knew the House had an election coming. Now it's suddenly coming up when the Republicans are in charge of a different body because they think they can make political hay. Members, this should not be on the floor. It needs to go back to committee. Vote no.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is an important bill, and it's an important topic. We have talked about this for some months. I think there are some things that we have agreed on this year. One of the things we have agreed on, House, Senate, majority, minority, Democrat, Republican, we've all agreed that transportation is a big issue, a significant issue, and that we should find some way to resolve that, come up with something that will provide some sustainable funding to do something about our road infrastructure. Unfortunately, this is not that bill. We in the minority, we don't often win very many votes. We don't get a chance to really have a large effect on some legislation, but many times when we have bills, we offer ideas, we offer things to try to make a bill a little bit better in hopes that we can have some bipartisanship in the final passage of the bill. We took a hard look at this transportation bill, and we came to the conclusion that you just can't fix it. Just can't fix it. There's no amendment that you could offer to this bill that would fix it unless you completely redid the bill. And frankly, redid the bill along the lines of what we've seen happen in the other body, where they have put together a package of financing that doesn't rely on another tax, is just as sustainable, accomplishes just as many good things for the people of the state, but has the great virtue of not adding an additional tax on the backs of the people of the state of Minnesota, has been pointed out by many members here today, a tax that hits the poorest Minnesotans the hardest and ramps up as economic conditions get more difficult when gas prices rise. I think one of the things that's interesting about this debate, and you have on your desk, I think, a copy of a letter that the Chamber of Commerce distributed. And you might remember a few years ago, the last time we had a debate on gas taxes, and it was a pretty contentious debate. And in fact, there was a governor's veto that was overridden. You might remember that. And one of the organizations involved in that debate was the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and they supported that gas tax increase. And there were many who thought that that would happen again this year as we had another debate on gas taxes. But if you look at the letter, you'll see that they don't. And for some of the very reasons that were mentioned in the debate today, they talked about how the price of gas, the low price of gas, was one of the things that has fueled the economic recovery that we have seen. Even though it may not be robust, there's no question that lower gas prices have a significant impact on people's home economies. And when gas prices go up, that hurts. And when you add on top of it a gas tax that rises, that's going to have even a more detrimental effect. The other thing I think that is interesting that their chamber letter points out is the fact that this solution is broadly opposed by people of this state. They mentioned a couple of surveys they did that showed 55 to 57% of the people of Minnesota say this is not the way to solve our transportation needs. We do not need to add another $2 billion of taxes. It's likely to go up as prices of gas go up. This is not how you do it. We had in the last biennium a $2 billion tax increase, $2 billion of taxes that had to be raised in order to balance the budget. We now have a $2 billion surplus. That must be just a coincidence. And now we're seeing another $2 billion tax increase being proposed to accomplish some needed infrastructure improvements, but they don't have to be accomplished with another tax, as has been shown in the bill in the other body. So it's disappointing to us on this side of the aisle to go through this and look at this kind of bill being proposed. I don't think this bill is going to go anywhere. I don't think the people of the state of Minnesota want this bill to go anywhere. I'm not getting a lot of mail. In fact, I'm not getting any mail from people saying, yes, we really need a higher gas tax. Please, put a higher gas tax on something that's fundamental to all our economies. I haven't gotten those letters. Maybe you have. I have not. So I think as we think about this bill, I think it demands a no vote. It doesn't mean that we've given up on the idea of funding transportation. It does allow us to maybe take a fresh look at the kind of changes, kind of innovations, kind of proposals that the House has offered. I hope when we see this bill again, and I trust we will, I hope we will. I hope we see a transportation bill this year. And I hope what it is a dedicated funding that does not rely on a new tax, but relies on dedicating funds that taxes that we currently have that are transportation related, as the House bill does. That is an innovative solution. That is something that will provide needed funding to transportation. So I am optimistic that we will see a chance for this body to really enact transportation infrastructure funding that makes sense. But this bill does not make sense. And so I guess those of you who are going to vote for it, good luck. Good luck explaining this to your constituents. Good luck explaining this to people of Minnesota. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to any of us on our side. We don't think it makes sense to the people of Minnesota. And we hope that this bill will not pass today. So, members, I would urge a red vote.
Senator Dibble, final comments.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, members, for the debate and the conversation that we've had on the floor today. Members, Madam President, I like the use of the word war because this bill is a war. It's a war on the kinds of congestion that we're facing. It's a war on our lack of investment that have occurred over 30 years, despite the little bump that we got about 7 years ago. It's war on potholes, and it's an effort to invest in shared prosperity across this state. Make no apologies for this bill. We know from what I said earlier that business pays a huge premium. We either make some rational investments up front, or we pay later in lost opportunity, we pay in congestion, we pay in the inability to get to the things that are important in our lives. Madam President, I don't aspire at all to what the House has put before the state of Minnesota and the people of Minnesota for transportation. In order to do what they're doing, they're taking from general fund resources that we would otherwise be using for our senior citizens and health care and education. They have over $1 billion that they're cutting from the poorest and sickest Minnesotans in health care and human services, the youngest. You want to talk about a war on poor people and the most vulnerable and the most needy? That's a war on the most vulnerable and the most needy. And what are they doing? They're putting that in the transportation bill. You know what? We've read this book before. This legislature has tried to put general fund dollars into transportation in the past. And you know what's happened? The next year it gets taken right out. Right out. So Senator Hahn is incorrect when he says this is a sustainable plan that the House is putting before us. It is exactly the opposite. What we do in transportation is we dedicate reliable, ongoing, sustainable resources so that we can plan for a long-term horizon, so that businesses and communities and people can invest in their lives and know that their ability to get to the places and people getting to their jobs and their work sites and people can and businesses can get goods and services to market, and construction companies can invest in mobilizing a workforce and in the intensive capital investments they need to make to build those roads and bridges over the long haul. That's what sustained investment in transportation looks like. And we fail to do that. We pay because other states become more competitive, and they're making those investments. State after state, controlled by Republican governors and Republican legislatures, are raising their gas taxes, are raising sales taxes in their metropolitan areas, because they know that those are investments that have a return on the dollar, and they know that they'll pay anyways in a loss of opportunity, in congestion, in lack of shared prosperity. That's the alternative. That's what the House puts before us. They don't invest in education. Less than 1% on the formula. That's how they get to their transportation plan. Is that the trade-off that we want? We know that if we were to go down the path of the House, as soon as there's any downturn, as soon as there's any competition for those resources in the general fund, they'll be slipped right out of transportation in a hot second. Because, of course, children and seniors, education, health care, safe communities, taking pressure off the property tax, those are our priorities. This bill, as a matter of fact, does do that. It provides the resources to those local units of government, our counties, our townships, our municipalities, that otherwise are going to tremendous effort through the property tax and still not keeping up with the infrastructure that they need. This is over 90% of our roadway system. The state highways bear the brunt of the traffic, but most of the mileage is supported by our local units of government. We know, we read in the newspaper on Sunday, we're losing young people from this state, the millennials. Why? Because they're going to places that offer a quality of life and the kind of amenities and the transportation choices that they're looking for. We can't afford to lose those bright young Minnesotans. We can't afford to not attract more bright young people to this state if we're going to continue to compete. We have a gap in skills for jobs that are growing in this state. We have literally hundreds of people isolated in Minnesota already from being able to get to those jobs. That's not acceptable. This is an affirmative, positive investment that Minnesotans understand. And contrary to the claims, the way the gas tax is configured, it's counter-cyclical. So we look back on the price, and average it out, and set it for the coming year, and very predictable. So with that, Madam President, I just want to take one moment to thank a few folks. I first want to thank the committee. We have very, very good and very intense debates, very respectful, and everyone makes a tremendous contribution to the debates that we have in our committee. So I thank all of the committee members, every single one. It's an excellent and outstanding committee to chair, and I'm proud to serve with everyone on our committee. Especially Susan Kent, our vice chair, who handles the gavel well in my absence or when I need to present. Our nonpartisan staff, Bonnie Berezovsky, Krista Boyd, Robin Rumka, who we put to tremendous, tremendous amount of work, and they do an amazing job. And the rest of our staff, Kyle Olson and Suzanne Sabatka in my office, Charlie Bruce, Skylar Vilt, Ellen Anderson, Peter Mavis, Megan Tolbert, all who work for the various partisan offices. Our committee page, Isaac Mullen. Sometimes we also have Joe and Andy Knock helping us out when we're in other rooms. Our interns, Remy Eisendrath and Aaron Roundtree. And, of course, the bus driver who drove us around to St. Cloud, Betty Crabtree, had to say her name on the floor because she's got a great name. with that, Madam President, I appreciate everyone's attention and a good debate, and I would urge a green vote.
Is there any further discussion? Then the Secretary will take the roll on House File 4. Okay, 4656. Okay, so we're all on the board. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 36 ayes and 27 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 156 on general orders, Senate File 1647, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1647 is the Senate Transportation Omnibus Policy Bill. Madam President, it has a number of provisions from a number of legislators. And so I will try to run through those quickly. Then I have a technical amendment to offer, well, not quite technical, but a small amendment to offer. And then I'll stand for questions and amendments. Madam President, in summary, it contains, I'll also just mention briefly that a number of the policy elements that didn't have any finance nexus were taken out of the bill that we just voted on. And this bill had been returned back to division for the purpose of placing those policy items in this bill, and then it was sent back up to the floor. And so that's what's in front of us. We have my Senate File 1647. I had mentioned some discussion about a cost share policy that MnDOT requires of local units of government when state facilities are built through communities. And it's important that MnDOT enter into a conversation in an effort to bring down the level of participation required of local units of government when those projects come through. So Senate File 1647 directs that work. Senator Eakin had Senate File 632, which allows for electronic insurance identification cards to be provided as valid proof of insurance. Senator Rest, Senate File 918, which requires there be two-person crews for freight railroads, for freight rail that's coming through our state rather than just one. Senate File 1039 is from Senator Metzen, which allows deputy registrars and driver's license agents to store motor vehicle transactions electronically after 60 days. Senate File 1393 from Senator Kent, which is the work zone safety obedience to a flagger matter, giving probable cause for the purpose of issuing a citation to a driver if someone has not followed the directions of a flagger in a road construction work zone. Senate File 1461 from Senator Kent allows construction scheduling information created in the MnDOT system to be classified as non-public until the contract is awarded. Senate File 1060 is from Senator Jensen, allowing truckers moving through Minnesota to use aerodynamic devices. Those are called rear tail fairings or trailer tails. Senate File 1573, Senator Jensen, which is a DPS agency initiative, adopts federal 14 federal regulations to conform for out-of-service orders on commercial motor vehicles. Senate File 1574 from Senator Jensen clarifies, with respect to oversized load escorts, clarifies that Minnesota only requires an individual to obtain certification as a pilot car driver in order to escort an oversized load in the state. Senate File 1436, Senator Hoffman, has to do with motorcycle headlamps, the number of headlamps permitted on a motorcycle from 2 to 4, with some technical changes. Senate File 1180, Senator Carlson, allows for parked utility vehicles to be treated as other emergency vehicles on the side of the highway, requiring motorists, if possible, to move over to the left-hand lane. Senate File 1473, Senator Carlson, this has to do with disability parking data for the purpose of in traffic or parking enforcement when folks are using disability certificates who shouldn't be. Senate File 1705, Senator Dietzick updating some of the requirements on railroad liability, railroad corporations being responsible for damages to persons in private and public entities whose property would be potentially damaged by fire if the fire is spread or caused by the rolling stock, etc. We have Senate File 877, Senator Sparks, which changes current law with respect to when utilities need to cross over railroad right-of-way, establishing a standard crossing fee and allowing construction contracts, et cetera, just to make that whole process a bit more uniform and predictable. Senate File 1128, Senator Herr allows for the City of St. Paul to pass an ordinance restricting the use of engine braking devices, the large trucks coming through a stretch of 94 through St. Paul neighborhoods being disallowed to create that that very loud staccato noise when those devices are utilized. Senator Champion has a MnDOT agency bill with a number of provisions have to do with road construction and drainage permits in city limits, giving the department the authority to begin planning and identifying a route from St. Paul through Duluth to the Canadian border for the Oberstar Memorial Trail, requiring that a contractor may request a subcontracting goal waiver if they have shown good faith efforts to meet specified goals for targeted groups or veteran-owned small businesses. Turn back for Highway 75 to Lochie Parle County, and then allowing the commissioner to use an administrative law judge for deciding eminent domain cases in a pilot program for up to 5 projects. Senate File 1521, this is a Senator Rest initiative limiting the eminent domain powers of railroad corporations with respect to taking Hennepin County property or Hennepin County Regional Rail property if Hennepin County determines that the public safety or access of first responders would be negatively affected by that taking. Senate File 858, Senator Peterson J. Is a modification to our safe routes to school, requiring that counties, cities, towns must have developers included in safe routes to school infrastructure in new developments. Senate File 1052, Senator Tomasoni, having to do with commercial vehicle inspections, eliminates the required daily inspection reports for commercial motor vehicles. If no defects are identified, vehicle is not used to carry passengers. Senate File 1852, Senator John Peterson, has to do with ditch mowing, changing the dates and minimum height of when right-of-way can be mowed, permitting requiring a hang permit on state and federal highways, et cetera. This is an effort to provide for wildlife management and the like. A provision from myself that was removed from the finance division bill, allowing quarters of commerce to be used for improvement projects when state highways are going through municipalities, an initiative from Senator Carlson, again, that came out of the division report into this bill, allowing a representative from the suburban opt-out transit providers to have a representative on the Metropolitan Council's TAB, the Transportation Planning Advisory Board. Senator Senjum, again a provision coming out of the Finance Division report into this bill, requiring the Commissioner of Transportation to report on expanding the use of tolling in Minnesota. Another initiative from myself coming out of the Finance Division report into this bill, adding a provision to have the Department of Public Safety analyze the impacts of ethanol transportation by rail in Minnesota. Senator Carlson, accessible parking signs. State entities who receive funding from the state must remove, as they are retired, parking signs with handicap or disabled to replace with the word accessible. This is Senator Hoffman's bill that he developed in conjunction with his daughter, Hope. Another provision, again, coming out via amendment into this bill, Senator Rest developing a mechanism by which MnDOT can contract with Red Lake for a project improving Highway 1 in accordance with various federal regulations, but providing for a means by which the agency, the department, can utilize Indian-owned contractors to build that project. Senator Westrum has a provision clarifying that electronic messages that are not permitted while driving does not include data and images contained in GPS or navigation systems. So this is the modification to the texting while driving so that you can look at GPS directions while driving and not be in violation of the law. Senator John Peterson, outdoor electronic advertising, clarifying that advertising devices and digital contact must be static images and text while clarifying prohibitions on distracted advertising. It basically codifies existing MnDOT policy on electronic outdoor advertising. Senator Westrum's mini truck sunset repeal, of which we've had a lot of discussion. I'm informed these are mini trucks, not small trucks. Mini trucks, not small trucks. Senator Senjum had a fingerprinting services initiative looking for the Department of Public Safety to make recommendations for providing commercial truck drivers with fingerprinting services needed to meet Homeland Security requirements, et cetera, taking advantage of fingerprinting services that exist around the state rather than making them drive to a centralized place for that purpose. Senator Reinert and his Trunk Highway 23 up in his neck of the woods in Duluth, requiring MnDOT to work with folks up there so that bicycle and pedestrian path would approach street level as it emerges from under the bridge. I think this is near the zoo up there. And that is those are all the provisions in the bill, Madam President. I will offer quickly the A24 amendment.
Secretary will report the A24 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend Senate File Number 1647 as follows, page 29, and this is the A24 amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Madam President, this is a slight modification to Senator Hoffman, Senator Carlson's initiative that I mentioned that was developed in conjunction with Senator Hoffman's daughter, Hope, on replacing handicapped and disabled with the term accessible, just removing the delayed effective date because these signs will be replaced on a routine schedule rather than requiring the immediate replacement of signs, and also clarifying that this is confined to state agencies.
Discussion of the A24 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A24, please say aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Further discussion.
Madam President.
Senator Dibble.
I will respond to questions or amendments.
Is there further discussion? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam President. I have an amendment that I'd like to offer. It's the A26th amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Stumpf moves to amend Senate File Number 1647 as follows, page 16, and this is the A26th amendment.
Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and members, this is an amendment that was brought to me from the Minnesota Wheat Growers Association the Department of Public Safety, and some of the Motor Carrier Safety Administration. What it does is it allows a federal conformity to the non-domiciled commercial driver's license people. And what that is there during the harvest time, we have commercial harvesters that start down in Texas or Oklahoma and work their way north. And many of these people are people who have come from other countries. Some of them are Scandinavian. Some of them are from all over the place. They have the driver's license in their country. The federal government, the United States federal government, has recognized their driver's licenses, and many other states have recognized that as well. But Minnesota has not. And what this would do would be to allow this recognition of the federal permit to recognize that they have the CDL license, but they actually get a license that doesn't, it says that they're a non-domiciled commercial driver, and most of these individuals are working on the harvest in the different Midwestern states. I would stand for any questions, and I know I talked to Senator Dibble about this earlier.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, members, I support Senator Stump's A26. I know he's worked very hard to figure out all the particulars on this for the better part of this session, and has figured out some mechanisms for this to work and for this to not trigger a fiscal cost. So I support the A26.
Further discussion of the A26 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A11 amendment.
Secretary will report the A11 amendment.
Senator Skoy moves to amend Senate file number 1647 as follows, page 2. This is the A11 amendment.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President and members. And members, this is an amendment that's trying to deal with when there's a road construction project and a business has had its access changed that they feel has impacted their ability to bring customers in and out of their business. Currently, there is no mechanism in place for them to appeal what MnDOT has decided with regard to the access. And so what this amendment is would put in place where that they would be able to go to district court, a de novo district court, and have them review the decision and see and have the commissioner come with their clear and convincing evidence to deny or revoke the driveway permit. And it seems like it would be reasonable for there to be an appeal process when MnDOT is making decisions with regard to access that impact businesses around the state. And so I would ask your support on the A11 amendment.
Discussion. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I don't rise in opposition, but I think it's important to note for the record that the Department of Transportation, while on the one hand recognizes that it is probably important to give landowners and land occupants a method to appeal the denial or revocation or some of this impact of their projects on their properties. They are concerned about some of the particulars and the expense that's related to Senator Skoy's provision. That being said, I think this is an important conversation to continue to have and to move forward on this bill, and so that we can continue to have those productive conversations with the Department of Transportation, so that
landowners who are affected and impacted by the circumstances that Senator Scoy describes, driveway permits, businesses that are being denied access, losing their business. This is something that we struggle with in our committee. Senator Senjum brought us an interesting initiative for Red Wing Shoes down in, it's a slightly different matter, but similar effect and similar outcome for the business down in Rochester. These projects have significant consequence and impact. It's part of a larger effort that we're undertaking to really understand how decisions are made and how we can access and provide input as leaders, as local community leaders, as the public, as business owners, et cetera, into when projects are planned, when they're programmed, and how they come out in the end. So I support the amendment, but also support an effort to get to a place where all parties are supportive, including the agency.
Further discussion? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Scoy, for bringing this forward. While we all love highway projects, I will tell you, and I can just refer to our Highway 52 project on maybe at least two or three occasions, these issues were difficult ones, and there was really no way that anyone had in terms of reconciling it. It seemed like, a one-way street, and so I think Senator Scoy is trying to at least provide an option here for property owners that feel aggrieved in terms of access to their property during these projects, and that's an important option. I think hopefully we can adopt it.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Scoy yield for a question?
Yes, he does. Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Scoy, this contains a standard of review for the district court, putting the burden on the commissioner to establish by clear and convincing evidence that the denial or revocation is necessary to prevent interference, etc. Have you had any input as to whether or not this standard of review is the same standard as would be applied to any other appeals or reviews of decisions by the commissioner? And is this a different process than a commissioner's decision would ordinarily follow for a review?
Senator Scoy, respond to the question.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, I do not have the answers to those questions. It just seems to me that when there are decisions being made that affect an individual or a business's opportunity to continue to do business in a location, and the highway changes their access, which reduces their business traffic by anywhere from 20 to 40%, and they can't survive as a business, they ought to have the opportunity to make their case. And the drafter, when I was working with these folks that were putting this together, we thought that the district court was the place to go with that. But as to the specifics of your question, I'm just not aware of those details.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Scoy, the reason I ask the questions is those would ordinarily be the kind of questions that we would ask were an amendment like this to come before the Judiciary Committee dealing with district court review. And I don't know the answers either. And I certainly agree with your premise that there should be some ability to review these kind of decisions. I'm just not sure if this is the right process or the right standard of review, the right burden of proof, the right party to place the burden of proof on, as compared to what would ordinarily or already exist for a review of a commissioner's decision. So having asked these what I think are relevant questions, and unless someone else in the body knows what those answers are, at this time I might have to ask members to oppose the amendment. Even though I kind of like the direction it's going, I'm not comfortable making these kind of decisions about district court standards review and so on without having that kind of information before us. It might set, frankly, a dangerous precedent that we might regret down the road in terms of standards of review for decisions by commissioners generally.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A11 amendment, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Further discussion. There being no further discussion, Senator Osment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam President, I would move the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Osmak moves to amend Senate File Number 1647 as follows, page 20, and this is the A50 amendment.
Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. I also move to impose a call of the Senate for the remainder of the bill.
Senate is under call. Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that further proceedings under the call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the Sergeant at Arms is instructed to bring in the absent members. Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. The A50 amendment deletes Section 37. This is a bill that we heard in transportation. It undermines collective bargaining. It really does ignore technological advances and mandates under the positive control or positive trade control technology that we currently have. It ignores rail safety improvements with crossings. And really, the Federal Railroad Administration is already studying this matter, and anything that we do, it could be superfluous and or overrided by what they come up with at the federal level. Members, we don't mandate two-member crews on airplanes. We don't mandate two-member crews to drive trucks, including semis that are full of gasoline or diesel. We don't require two-man crews or designate the number of people that have to be in a crew for a freighter on Lake Superior. It just seems to me this seems to be over-regulation, and we would be only one of two other states that require this. And Madam President, I'd request Mr. President, I would request a roll call vote.
There'll be a roll call. Any further discussion? Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask members to oppose this amendment, and I have handed out a memorandum with regard to research that's been done on safety issues with regard to two-person crews. We have had a lot of testimony in the Transportation Committee about this issue, and it is the case that who those two people would be on a train is a matter of collective bargaining, but not the fact that there are two employees of the railroads who would be who would be in charge of the train's operations. The other state, or one of the states, is indeed Wisconsin. And I think it is, even though right now there are very commonly two-person crews on trains, the freight trains, it is the case that there is rumblings, if you will, of the companies on their own moving toward one-person trains. And if you look at the information that is provided in the research for in a poll that was just recently released, I believe, early or mid last week, you can see that there is overwhelming support among the public with regard to safety for two-person crew legislation. So I would hope that you would take a look at that information and that you would reject Senator Osment's amendment.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment? Further discussion, Secretary Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. President, I join with Senator Rest in opposing the A50 amendment. I actually think for the reasons that Senator Osmek cited, the fact that a couple of other states have seen fit to pass a similar law, the fact that the Federal Rail Administration is looking at Federal Railroad Administration is looking at doing the same thing, the fact that we have these trains coming through our state in greater numbers that are contain very, very hazardous and explosive materials. Mr. President, members, I think the idea of having only one person who's staffing a very, very long 125 unit train is a pretty frightening and pretty daunting prospect. I think that is not well advised. I don't think the public would understand that. I think that the function of at least two people is highly, highly important. We had a tremendous amount of testimony. Senator Rest provided excellent comments. This is not well advised. If a Mr. President, has a roll call been requested?
Yes, there has been.
All right, thank you.
Further discussion on the Osmek A50 amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. Ready? After this one? Yeah. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 15 ayes and 45 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further amendment, Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the A30 amendment.
Secretary will report the A30 amendment. Yeah, thank you.
Senator Osmek moves to amend Senate File Number 1647 as follows, page 28, and this is the A30 amendment.
Senator Osmek on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is an anti-profiling amendment that I'm requesting on this bill. This is a bill that I had proposed early in session, and it was originally actually voted into the finance bill. It was taken out because we did not want to provoke a run into the Judiciary Committee. And I would like to put it back in. We heard compelling testimony from motorcycle enthusiasts who have been, in their opinion, being profiled. And this simply asks for the agency to put together an anti-profiling policy and implement it. Really doesn't have much cost. It can be done by the agencies themselves. And we heard in testimony, we heard a lot of comments from the motorcycle individuals that sometimes the police would be looking for a blue motorcycle, and because they were wearing paraphernalia that maybe made them look more like a gang member, and they were driving a red motorcycle, they still got pulled over. So, members, I hope you would consider this. This is to simply have some policies in place so that law-abiding citizens are not pulled over and profiled just because they might be wearing certain paraphernalia. Thank you. And I'd ask for a roll call vote. I'm sorry.
There will be a roll call. No roll call. Further discussion, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Osmick is correct. This was supported by the committee at one time and then removed because it triggered a judiciary committee request. I don't know if Senator Latz has a reaction to this idea. We did hear from the folks from the motorcycle enthusiast community. We really haven't heard, I haven't heard anything from the law enforcement community on this matter either way. So I don't know the perspective of the law enforcement community, but that's where we stood with respect to this particular proposal. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion, Senator Latz.
Mr. President and members, this proposal in judiciary raised quite a few questions. The first of which, I'll know right now, if Senator Osmick says that there is some small cost to this, we're in a policy bill here, and this would be I'm out of order. So I guess maybe I'll assert that as a point of order, that according to the author of the amendment, there would be a small cost to this, and it'd be out of order in a policy bill.
Senator Osmond, did you say that the department can do this without an appropriation?
Mr. President, I did not get a fiscal note on this particular bill. It was brought up in committee. It did not actually go through judiciary. It was something that we brought into transportation finance. I understand that my interpretation of this is that the bill itself, I mean, you already have staff members that can deal with the situation. It would be more or less paying for cookies and coffee for people to get together and come up with a policy, and implementing it would be in the normal course of training of law enforcement officers. It wouldn't be any additional training they'd have to go to. So my opinion is to the chair that this really wouldn't have a significant impact, if fiscal impact at all.
Senator Latz, if you raised a point in order, would you state the point, or were you just speaking in general against the amendment?
Well, Madam President, I was stating a point of order. I don't have the rule book in front of me right now. I can look it up. But if there's a fiscal cost to this and a policy bill, it's not paid for, so it'd be out of order. It does mandate that the agency put together post board review compliance complaints. It requires individual local law enforcement agencies to put policies together. That itself would not be a violation, since we can impose local unfunded mandates without having any violation of the fiscal note requirements. But I don't see anything from the post board that says that they'll be able to handle any complaints without any cost that's imposed.
Madam President.
Senator Osmick.
Would Senator Latz yield?
Senator Latz will yield. Senator Osmick.
Madam President, Senator Latz, if you would entertain this bill next session in judiciary, I'd be more than happy to withdraw this and move on.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, yes, we'll be happy to hear this bill next session.
Then I assume that your point of order is withdrawn.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Madam President, I'll withdraw the bill, the A50 amendment.
The A30 amendment is withdrawn.
Or 30. Yep.
Confused up here now. Are there any other amendments? Senator Osmick?
Thank you, Madam President. I move the A29 amendment.
Secretary will report the A29 amendment.
Senator Osmick moves to amend Senate file number 1647 as follows, page 28, and this is the A29 amendment.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. I request a roll call vote.
Roll call vote requested. Roll call granted.
Thank you, Madam President. The A29 amendment simply states that any money going towards the capital costs of light rail transit in Minnesota has to be legislatively authorized by the state of Minnesota. We just saw in the newspaper today another 300 and some million dollars worth of costs are now being associated with the Southwest Light Rail Transit project. This project is spinning out of control. It is going to go over $2 million, I have no doubt in my mind. On a project of that significant cost to the taxpayers and to generations to come, because this isn't just going to be a project we're going to pay for up front, we're going to have to pay for it over a long period of time, and our grandchildren will still be paying off this boondoggle. The Southwest, we should be authorizing that for our 10% match. According to the regulations, we have to provide, there has to be a 10% state match. We need to authorize that by our legislative intent. By voting for this, you will say that the legislature gets to make the choice on its 10%. And if we deem that this is not a project that we see as economically viable, that makes sense for the state of Minnesota, then we will be able to take that positive vote. Members, I'd urge a green vote. Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I would oppose Senator Osmick's A-29 amendment. This amendment was offered in committee, and we had a good discussion about it, and it was not accepted into the bill. Madam President, I would also call members' attention to the second sentence, any local share, local match required by federal law or by an agency of the federal government, et cetera, that will be provided by a non-state source must first be authorized by law. So that's, in other words, Madam President, even the initial look, the initial discussions, the initial alternatives analysis that is undertaken by counties, by regional rail authorities and the like would be prohibited. And I think that would, this is just simply a not-so-veiled attempt to completely kill our ability to develop light rail transit transitways in the metropolitan area, and I think that is not appropriate for this bill.
Senator Osmick.
Well, Senator Dibble, I appreciate your comments, but we have an unelected body that is going to be making a decision that's going to create a $2 billion project, and we're at the state of Minnesota going to blink and say, well, that sounds good to us. I'm sorry, and this is just the next phase, because of course we know that we have another line that I know that is rather popular with some members of the chamber, the Botno line, that's up to bat next, which is going to probably, I wouldn't doubt that one, going over $3 billion. We are sucking money out of the transportation system. We are sucking money out of the wallets of our grandchildren, our unborn, I don't have any grandchildren, my unborn grandchildren, hopefully someday I'll have some. But Senator Dibble, this says that we have to, here at the state, make the decision. I'm not going to punt this to the Met Council. I'm not going to give them the authority either if I get the chance. This is an opportunity for you to actually say whether you think a $2 billion rail line makes sense in the state of Minnesota.
Any more discussion on the A-29 amendment? Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 25 ayes and 36 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Are there any other amendments? Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A25 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A25 amendment.
Senator Schmidt moves to amend Senate file number 1647 as follows, page 16, and this is the A25 amendment.
Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is language that should be familiar to us. We amended this onto our judiciary bill last Thursday, and it came to us late in the session from local law enforcement officers who are concerned about an uptick in bail enforcement agent activity in southeastern Minnesota. It's by and large unregulated, and what we do here is try to spell out some just basic restrictions on what a bail enforcement agent may wear and what he or she may drive in terms of a vehicle. If members have any questions, I'd be happy to stand for them. Otherwise, we're just adding some specificity onto this bill.
Senator Peterson. I'm sorry. Yes, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. I would question the germaneness of this amendment, and I don't have the rule in front of me.
Advice, Senator Schmidt.
Madam President, I would reference the fact that it does seek to amend Section 169 in law, and that is generally transportation policy.
Senator Peterson.
Madam President, nowhere in the transportation policy bill do we get into matters of bail bondsmen or bounty hunters or anything that is even really relatively close to that. As you know, Madam President, the basis for germaneness is not necessarily simply the fact that it comes from the same chapter of law.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I will note that at least the first section of the bill that speaks to Section 28, Subdivision 3A, has to do with the markings on motor vehicles used by bondsmen or bail enforcement agents as clearly a transportation matter.
Madam President.
More advice.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Peterson.
Now that I have my rules in front of me, particularly I would point you to 35.2 Clause 2, which states is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill to which it's proposed. I think, Madam President, I won't spell that out for you, but I think it's abundantly clear that This amendment sets out to establish a substantially different purpose, even if there is a citation with regard to some license that may or may not be required to perform these duties.
Any other advice? Then I'll rule that the amendment is not germane. The point is well taken. Are there any other amendments? Seeing no further amendments, the Secretary will give Senate File 1647 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1647, a bill for an act relating to transportation, amending various provisions related to transportation and public safety policies.
Any more discussion? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to once again articulate my thanks to a great committee that I have the honor of chairing, as well as incredible staff that worked so hard to put these bills together.
Any more discussion? Then the secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1647. All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 42 ayes and 20 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. That's the end of special orders. So any members have any announcements? Senator Rood.
Madam President and members, many of you saw the...
Senator Rood, just a minute. We're almost done. We just have a few announcements. Please give Senator Rood the courtesy to... pay attention to her announcement and others.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, we've been talking transportation all day long, and I would like to invite you to Breezy Point this weekend. We have our first annual fly-in. We think our small regional airports are of great importance. We also have our Civil Air Patrol that will be helping us. They'll be wing walkers all day. And so we're celebrating transportation in Breezy Point on Saturday with cars and planes, and you're welcome to fly in or drive in, and so I invite you all to come. There's flyers in the back. Thank you.
Our Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, Tax Committee will meet immediately following the recess.
Are there any other announcements? Then Senator Bach. I don't think so.
Madam President, we're going to recess for just long enough for the Tax Committee to process the education bill, and then we'll come back, bring it up here just to do the committee report later tonight, and I think there's a little bit of other paperwork at the desk that we need to resolve, so everybody don't feel like you have to stay, but I don't expect there'll be any votes taken other than a couple of paperwork voice votes. With that, Madam President, I move the Senate recess to the call of the chair. Don't expect it to be very long.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess. The Senate will come to order. Senator Bach.
Madam President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
Secretary will read the report.
Senator Bach from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be, and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate file number 888. Senators Saxhog, Pappas, Carlson, Wicklund, and Metzen. Senator Bach moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Third order of business, reports of committees. The Secretary will read the report.
Senator Skoy from the Committee on Taxes, to which was re-referred Senate file number 811, a bill for an act relating to education, providing funding and policy for early childhood and family, pre-kindergarten through grade 12, and adult education, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee report read by the Secretary be adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate file 811 will be given its second reading. We revert to third order of business, messages from the House. Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 844, a bill for an act relating to education, providing for funding and policy in early childhood, kindergarten through grade 12, and adult education. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
This bill is referred to the Committee on Rules. First reading of House bill.
House file number 844.
House file 844 will be referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate file 811, now on general orders. Announcements. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senators Anderson, Goodwin, all day. Senator Dames, 3:30 to the end of session. Senators Han, 3:30 to 3:35, Senator Brown, 3:55 to the end of session, Senator Nelson, 3:55 to 4, Senator Bach and Cohen, 3:55 to 4, Senator Bonner, 4:50 to the end of session, Senator Bach, 5:15 to 5:30. Are there any other announcements? And Senator Bach.
Madam President, move that the Senate do not adjourn until Tuesday, April 28th, 12 o'clock noon.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.